I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite song on the Mass Effect Legendary Edition launcher. Hello, and welcome to episode 132 of Rhythm Encounter, RPG Fans Music Podcast. I'm Mike Solosi, and yes, I'm a different Mike than perhaps you're used to hearing, but we're going to discuss a topic today that is, I don't want to say near and dear to my heart, but a topic that just makes itself apparent to me multiple times every year, remasters of RPGs. Video game remasters have become a regular part of the video game release cycle. Now people that grew up with video games have the buying power to relive those childhood memories, and sometimes remasters will happen as soon as 3 or 4 years after the original comes out, which seems strange to me, but I'm not here to clown on The Last of Us. We're going to talk about some classic RPGs that received remasters, including remastered soundtracks. But before we get into the meat of the conversation, let's introduce the rest of the panel. They are Lucas Green.
Hello.
Gio Castillo.
Hello.
And Audra Bowling.
Hiya.
Audra, Gio, Lucas, just like I said a moment ago, RPG remasters are just a regular part of the release cycle nowadays. And I know that, I mean, just glancing at the last couple episodes of Retro Encounter, I've played several already this year. Does anyone want to volunteer? What's an RPG remaster that you played recently? It doesn't have to be one that just came out, just a remaster that's fresh in your mind. Whoever wants to go first.
Sure. I'll start with an easy one. I played Final Fantasy IV Pixel Remaster for Retro Encounter.
You don't say. That makes two of us. That one had some really killer music remixes.
It really does.
It does that thing where, you know, it's the soundtrack how you remember it as a kid and not how it actually was as a kid. But Gio, I know that you have a couple remasters on the list below us, but what's a remaster that stuck in your mind that you played recently?
I actually keep thinking about Day of the Tentacle Remastered. I just played it for like the first time last year.
That's a classic LucasArts game.
Yeah, it's really, really funny. Like, it's my first LucasArts, like, point-and-click game, and it was just a joy. I had so much fun, like, but, I mean, I almost thought about bringing, like, music from it, but nothing really stood out music-wise, but, you know, the game itself is just amazing.
Oh, I hadn't thought of those, because, I mean, I did play a remastered version of Monkey Island for the Retro Encounter podcast a few years ago, and before that, I played it the Grim Fandango remaster. I've never played Day of the Tentacle. I've only played those two I mentioned before, as well as Full Throttle, which is, I just have vivid memories of as a child. But yeah, LucasArts remasters. Those are, I'm excited that you get to experience perhaps more of those for the first time soon.
Hell yeah.
Audra, what's a remastered RPG that you played recently? Doesn't have to be the most recent.
Probably Mass Effect Legendary Edition. I keep going back to it in the hopes that I'll finish a playthrough at some point, but
Hell yes.
Get distracted by it. Other things, so
I spread a playthrough of that trilogy over all of 2022, and we podcasted about it, and those games are as good or better than I remember, and I also got to play the Citadel and Leviathan DLCs for the first time.
Yes, Citadel DLC is awesome.
Citadel is maybe, I'm not sure if Citadel or Shadow Broker is the best Mass Effect DLC, but both of them are on the short list of best DLCs of anything ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right up there, right, so good.
Yeah, right up there with Old Hunters. Gio knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just to piggyback on what Lucas was saying a little while ago, I went and played the Final Fantasy V remaster within a few days after finishing the FF4 remaster, just because, I don't know, it scratched such a specific itch that I wanted to do some more of it, and I ended up knocking out all of Final Fantasy V in record time, including maxing out jobs, because that remaster, the Pixel remaster, lets you break the game in interesting ways. But so anyway, like, all of us have played multiple remastered RPGs over the past couple of years, so there is ample music to choose from for an episode like this, where we're talking about some of our favorite remastered soundtracks. And we have 9 tracks to discuss today, or we should say 8 plus 1 bonus. And I I grouped them roughly thematically, but it's not that important, the order. The important is that we just, you know, enjoy some music and get to talking about it. And for the first track of the night, we have Lucas. So what is your track number one?
Okay, my track number one is Battle on the Big Bridge by Nobuo Uematsu from the Final Fantasy V Pixel Remaster.
Well, that sounds so familiar to me. What do you know? And Audra, your pick is from a game I haven't played, but I might yet soon. What is it?
Oh, it is, hopefully I don't butcher the name, the title, but it's Aria di Mezzo Carattere, the English language version from Final Fantasy VI Pixel Remaster, also by Nobuo Uematsu.
All right, so we have a Final Fantasy Anthology double feature to start. Battle on the Big Bridge from Final Fantasy V Pixel Remaster and Aria di Mezzo Carattere from Final Fantasy VI Pixel Remaster. Let's have a listen.
So as soon as I saw that this was the episode coming up, I knew I was going to bring Battle on the Big Bridge on. It's one of my favorite tracks from any of the Final Fantasy, early Final Fantasies, and it is one that I had been joking about bringing on the show when I was on the underrated Final Fantasy songs a little while ago. So it had kind of been on my mind. I was making the joke of, well, you know, we don't want to represent the big Final Fantasy game, so I'm going to go with one from 5. You know, an underrated classic like Battle on the Big Bridge.
The thing is, taking those words verbatim, I don't think Battle on the Big Bridge is an underrated song. I think it's maybe the signature song of Final Fantasy V. The issue would be Final Fantasy V being underrated because it is so far overshadowed by its 1990s peers.
Exactly. And part of the reason I was thinking about it, and I didn't end up going with it because it is such a standout, and it's been reused so many times, it's so iconic, was the fact that it's a song that kind of doesn't last very long in Final Fantasy V either. Like, that segment of the game is very brief, and so even though it is one of the best tracks, it's not something that's really highlighted in the game itself very well. But this version has, you know, the more modern instrumentals at the beginning. It's got the awesome horns, and it more than did it justice.
You know, when I think of a character theme in an RPG, I like thinking of it similar to a professional wrestler's music, because you have to instantly know who's about to make an appearance from the first few seconds. And Gilgamesh announces his presence in every Final Fantasy game he's in with those soaring opening chords or arpeggios or whatever you want to call them, and just climbing up and down. Usually electric guitar is involved. It is such a high energy, cool song. You only really hear it persistently in that one section in the middle of Final Fantasy V on the, you know, namesake Big Bridge. But whenever Gilgamesh pops up, sometimes unexpectedly, the rest of the game, it's just a treat to hear his theme again. And this is a great, great version of it. It preserves everything that's fun about the original. I don't think it's even a single, like, BPM of tempo different from the original. But it's got that the electric piano for those for the climbing stuff at the beginning, a more authentic horn sound for its for the main melody, and just very fun guitars and drums backing it up. It is a soaring rock song that. And Uematsu loves to rock, and when he gets an opportunity to do so in Final Fantasy battle tracks, sometimes it's really special. I love this one. It's a classic.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it's just a, you really just kind of, you feel your blood pumping when you hear it. It's a great battle theme and character theme.
Yeah. You know, admittedly, I've never played Final Fantasy V, just for whatever reason, but, like, I know this song. Like, it's like one of the first Final Fantasy songs I heard. So it's just, it's amazing. And it's probably like the best version, like, of the, like, just of the, you know, non-arranged, like, non-actual instruments, you know, versions of the song. It's just great.
This is going to sound crazy, but I think my introduction to Final Fantasy Gilgamesh was his weird appearance in Final Fantasy VIII, where he's a sort of GF. It's difficult to explain what's going on with him there. But I'm like, well, who's this weirdo? I guess it's some Japanese thing I don't understand. But then around 2000 or so, when I think Final Fantasy Anthology came out in 99 in the US. I didn't play it for until a year or two later. But when I first played Final Fantasy V and finally got around to it, this song really hits you like glass breaking. It's jarring, but in a good way, and super high energy and fun. And like I said before, one of the signature tracks of Final Fantasy V. And this remaster, all the music in the Pixel remasters that I've heard so far is excellent, and this one might just is still a standout song in FF5. But you know, Final Fantasy V has some kind of like surf ska rock as its signature track. Let's move on to one of the signature tracks of Final Fantasy VI. And I think the Pixel Remaster version from 2022 goes a step or two beyond the 1994 Super Nintendo approximated vocalizations into real English language lyrics. And so, Audra, let's talk a little bit about Maria and Draco / Aria di Mezzo Carattere, but with real words sung aloud this time.
Oh, yes. Actually, the Pixel Remaster 2022 version was the first actual version of the game that I played. And I already had heard a version of Maria and Draco before and the opera, and I knew it was like a very iconic piece to the Final Fantasy VI storyline. And I kind of love the care and attention that they put into actually coming up with the lyrics and the English language version. And apparently they did quite a few different language versions as well for different languages, which I thought was a really interesting thing, because I think so many people have such a connotation with the song, an emotional reaction.
Well, I mean, you've never experienced the Final Fantasy VI opera until you've heard it in the original Italian, am I right?
I was literally just listening to other language versions, and the Italian one's really good. So don't knock it.
I mean, what language do you think the title is in?
I know.
Yeah, I love the instrumentation, and I love the lyrics and how they actually fit. I mean, it sounds like a genuine actual opera, which I think is pretty impressive for the fact that it was a video game score that was much earlier done.
It's hard localizing lyrics, because not only does it have to fit the it doesn't have to be at least a faithful or at least a fair translation of the previous language, but it also has to fit meter and rhyme scheme so that it sounds like a real song in English. And that's why a lot of, you know, anime songs sung directly in English maybe sound a little awkward, because it's like, well, they really have to sometimes foist extra syllables in there. But this one, the writing flows beautifully. It's at the very, if not exactly the same, it's definitely true to the message and the memory of what it was when I played Final Fantasy VI for the first time. Geez, probably 28, 29 years ago. It was a little surreal hearing it sung in English for the first time. But I think the vocalist, their talent is very evident. The song is still gorgeous. And I truly cannot wait to get to the FF6 Pixel Remaster. It's ready to go in my Switch probably in another month or two.
Oh, it's good. It's definitely good.
I've played so many versions of FF6, but I'm down to play another one.
So I love Final Fantasy VI. I hate being the negative guy on this show occasionally.
Oh, that's okay.
But I don't love the vocalist in the English version. That's part of why I was looking at the other language tracks, because I was curious.
Oh, see, I thought it was deliberate that she's like untrained.
Oh yeah, like, I thought that they were kind of going for it because it's Silas.
Okay, yeah, if that was intentional, then that's fine. But there was something, it just felt very flat to me. And I don't know, maybe it was intentional. If that was the case, then they did a great job.
No, I agree with you, though. It doesn't sound good.
I mean, it doesn't have any squeakiness or pitchiness, but I guess it's not. No. I mean, they didn't get like a Broadway leading lady for this either.
I think
it fits from the story stance, because she's not an opera singer, technically, the C-list character. But yeah, I can see where.
I was trying to figure it out, because I didn't want to come on and just say I didn't like it. And basically what I was noticing is it's mostly with a lack of like any vibrato in the performance was the biggest thing. It felt just very like there wasn't a lot of dynamics, there wasn't a lot of vibrato, and so it just kind of felt a little bit one note. Like it was just, I mean, it almost seemed synthetic at times, which was really funny to me, because
It's possible that there's auto-tuning or some digital enhancement going on. But yeah, you're right. It is sort of flat in tone most of the time. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of tonality or dynamics. And for the listeners, dynamics is volume changes in musical terms, just in case you haven't taken as many music theory classes as Lucas or I.
So I went and listened to some of the other languages because I was curious if that was like something that they were going for with all of them. And most of the other ones had a lot more, they seemed like more classically trained operatic style singers. So it seemed a little bit odd to me that they would make that choice for the English, but not for the others.
Well, I don't know who the vocalist is. Maybe they did just get like the marketing head's niece or something to sing the song, for all we know.
I'm curious now. I want to hear the other languages just to compare.
I'll shoot you a link after we're...
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, they're definitely worth listening to, I think, too.
Yeah. I really liked the Korean and Italian ones.
Yeah. The fact that they did so many different versions is really impressive, I think.
You know, the Eurovision Song Contest is in just a handful of weeks from now. Maybe I should listen to it in Italian so I can understand the lyrics to La Noia a little bit better. I think either the Italian song or the Croatian song is winning it this year, but my favorite's the Norwegian song. All you ESC heads out there. Mm-hmm. I'm pulling for Norway, but I think it's going to be Croatia or Italy. But okay, if I'm talking about the Eurovision Song Contest, then we've definitely gone off the rails a little bit. Thank you so much, Lucas and Audra, for sharing some Final Fantasy Pixel Remastered remixes with us. Our next two are from... how do I put this? Either Yoko Shimomura or Yoko Shimomura adjacent games. Gia, what is your first track of the evening?
Yeah, I'm bringing Agnirotha, the nighttime version of the Mechanus Capital theme from Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition.
All right, and Lucas, you have the second track on this block. What are you bringing to the table?
My second track is Danger Aplenty on the Journey by Yoko Shimomura from the Super Mario RPG remake.
Excellent. So listeners, please enjoy Agnirotha, Mechanus Capital Night, and Danger Aplenty on the Journey.
Yeah, so that was Agniratha, Mykonos Capital Knight. When I was like picking songs for this episode, I was like kind of looking for songs that like kind of make more like drastic changes to their original songs. I ended up only picking one of those, which is this one. And I think like if you listen to the original, like you'll notice like they replaced like this like synthy, like high synth instrument with like a vocal, like a female vocal. And for me, it was like it was totally the right move, because like I think it really added to like the atmosphere of the song. This is like a late game area of Xenoblade Chronicles, and it's like this kind of a I can't remember if it's like an abandoned city, but it's like definitely like a bit bare, like not much going on. I forget if all the Mykonos people died or something, but
they didn't die. It's definitely war scarred, because I know you basically travel through a large section of the Mykonos like battlefield and then the capital, because you're trying to talk to Aegil, the Mykonos leader. Mm. And it feels like very very stately and elaborate and sometimes serene, but also you are in danger of being attacked by killer synthetics at any time.
Yeah, but I like that word, stately. I think this song kind of like makes it feel, you really get a sense of like the scale of this area when you visit it. And it's a bit sad because, yeah, it's kind of like war-torn. If not everyone died, I think a lot of people did just die in this area. And I don't know. I just really like the feeling. It's kind of unique among the other songs in the soundtrack, because like this one kind of gives me, it's kind of similar to what I would hear like in a Studio Ghibli movie. I don't know, something about the chord progression. Sounds yes. Like a Joe Hisaishi thing.
Yeah, maybe there's a little bit of Joe Hisaishi in there. I get it.
Yeah. And I just really enjoy it. I think it's a standout in the soundtrack, and one that I enjoyed when I was surprised when I visited this area in a definitive edition, because like it's one of the few songs I would say is like a clear improvement over the original.
I love the original Xenoblade. I've been on the record on saying that Xenoblade 1 is the only RPG with Xeno in the title that I've played to completion, although I've attempted several others. And the thing about that game is that the world is so beautiful and weird, because, again, it's two giants that are frozen in place after fighting each other for some indeterminate amount of time. And organic life grew on one giant, and synthetic life grew on the other giant. And the two sides have been fighting and hating each other for centuries or millennia without really understanding each other. And so your team is mostly organic people trying to travel across the Mykonos, the giant robot, robot sword, and then their body, to try and reason with the leader of the synthetics before the two sides start destroying each other again. It's more complicated than that. And you're being guided by a synthetic person that wants peace as you're going through here. So the whole song is sad, because like every single city you visit in Xenoblade is struggling. They're under attack from monsters. There isn't a really a giant thriving super bustling city, or if there is one, it circumstances change. So like you get the idea of this civilization was once much greater. It's a shadow of what it used to be, but there are people struggling to survive, and it could explode into war again at a moment's notice. My favorite part of Xenoblade is a little bit later on, the Fallen Arm, and I could talk about the story implications of that place later, but this Xenoblade is a special video game, and its soundtrack is so rich. I did compare this one to the original before we recorded, because I have only played the original, and it was something like 8 years ago when I did play it. This It's the original is haunting, but I agree the change to a human vocalist makes it even more haunting. It's special video game, special soundtrack, really good pick from that track. It's the sort of lonely, sad elegance of this song sets the tone for this part of the game really beautifully, even though it's basically a war zone.
The word that came to mind when I was listening to it was forlorn. It has that very, like, you could almost see this, like, playing in the background as someone was, like, you know, riding through an abandoned area at night and, like, way zoomed out and just with wind blowing. And the vocalist is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the vocals. Actually, haunting was probably the word I thought of the most when I was listening to it as well, so... I'm glad I wasn't the only one.
Yeah. Actually, I keep thinking of, like, Spirited Away or something like that, because, I don't know, something about, like, the... It's like, I could feel... It's like you're walking through, like, the meadow, like, at the start of the movie, like, and it's all windy and stuff, and, like, you're seeing, like, far away, there's, like, a town that's, like, abandoned, half buried in the ground, and... I find it really, really mysterious and cool. Yeah, I like Forlorn. I like
Haunt. Definitely helps bring that image. Yeah, definitely brings that imagery to life.
Damn, I should play this thing. I think this is the only game on this list where I guess there's also one later where I both haven't played the remaster and I haven't played the original in a long time either. So yeah. I need to do some more song side-by-side comparisons, because I love the original soundtrack to Xenoblade, but I haven't explored the Definitive Edition OST quite as deeply.
Well, if this is any indication, it's pretty good, too.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I mean, there's, like, something like 7 or 8 composers on the original. It's an enormous soundtrack, and they had to have at least as many arrangers for the new one. And yeah, it's... Xenoblade hasn't really missed yet. Again, this is the only one I managed to finish, but those are 4 super, super fascinating RPGs. And now if only Xenoblade Cross had a Switch version, or at least was on hardware that I owned, I would love to play it. But, you know, maybe someday. But, you know, there is some hardware I do own, and for a game that's much, much more available. You can play Super Mario RPG on the Super Nintendo, or the SNES Mini, or the Wii Virtual Console, or most recently, on the Switch remaster version. The turnaround for that was super fast. I think I could be wrong here. I think they announced it in something like August, and then it came out in November. It seemed like it just popped in out of nowhere. But suddenly we had this gorgeous, both visually and musically, new version of Super Mario RPG to play. So how about it, Lucas?
Yeah, I picked it up and played through the remake. My partner had never played Mario RPG before, so she wanted to go through it with me and really enjoyed it. When we were planning this episode, I was like, I want to pick something because this soundtrack is awesome, and it's one that I don't really think about in the same way as a lot of, like, the Final Fantasy and stuff, because it is a little bit more, you know, it's lighter. And the thing that made me pick this track in particular was actually same thing Gio mentioned, which is I wanted to think about what was the most enhanced by being remade. And the thing that really stood out to me with this was that really distinctive percussion, the xylophones in this track, and the difference that makes just having those, that more realistic sound going rather than that, just, you know, the SNES synths.
Yeah, I love the fuller orchestra, and I love the xylophone lower register. To me, this song is sneaking around. I think the area is called Bandit's Way, where you're trying to play tag with Croco, for one of the earlier boss fights in Mario RPG. And the song pops up in a couple other places later in the game as well, but that's just sort of the definitive spot for me. And listening to it, I am immediately transported there. This is it is a more bouncy, more quirky soundtrack than what you might call a heavier RPG from around that time from Squaresoft, like your Final Fantasy VIs or Chrono Triggers or maybe even Lives of the World. But no other game quite sounds like Super Mario RPG, and the remaster really preserved everything that was great about that soundtrack, but just brought it to 2023, as it were. I played it for the first time in a few years when it came out, and it was a total delight. It was maybe slightly too easy. We even talked about that in an episode of Retro Encounter a couple months ago, but it's a fun, breezy, lighthearted RPG that and it's the new remastered soundtrack fits it beautifully.
I love the energy of it.
Yeah, I'm same. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, am I crazy, or is this like a classical song that she kind of repurposed? Because, like, I feel like I've heard this as a...
It might... Is it?
I don't know. Like, it just sounds like a lot like, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like it's something kind of... It's kind of aping something in the vein of, like almost like the William Tell Overture kind of vibe.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's not, but... Yeah, it definitely has that same kind of DNA to it, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't know, I kind of wish that, you know, she'd do more stuff like this, like more RPGs that aren't Kingdom Hearts, so we could get more stuff, cool stuff like this. I really, really enjoyed this, like it's just really catchy. I found myself going back to this song in particular over and over.
Well, if you want some great Yoko Shimomura soundtracks that aren't Kingdom Hearts, might I direct you to Xenoblade Chronicles, Live Alive, Legend of Mana, and Super Street Fighter 2. That's
Oh yeah, well, I love the Legend of Mana soundtrack. It's so, so good.
But I mean, Mario RPG is so distinct, especially compared to everything else that was going on at that time. And the soundtrack is, to me, an indelible part of it. But you know, I've played Mario RPG a bunch of times. So when I played the remake several months ago, it really felt like I was revisiting an old friend. But the next song here is a game that I had never had an opportunity to play until its remake came out. So we're going to go with sort of two more modern games that had very recent remakes for our next block. And the first song of that block is from me. It is Collisions of Our Swords from Like a Dragon Isshin. And the second track from this block comes from Audra.
It is Resynthesis by Sam Hulick from Mass Effect Legendary Edition.
All right, listeners, so let's just get straight to it. Please enjoy Collisions of Our Swords and Resynthesis. We'll be right back. Right, so that is Collisions of Our Swords from Like a Dragon Ishin. In Japanese, that's Ryugakutoku Ishin Kiwami, because this is the 2023 remake of a, I believe, 2013 or 2014 PS3 game that for many years was a Japanese-only release. And this is a new song that was added for the 2023 version. It came in a weird EP release. It's that's why we can't figure out exactly who arranged it. It's because it's there's a bunch of arrangers on the soundtrack, and it's unclear who arranged this particular song. They added, I believe it's 6 or 7 songs for the 2023 game. A couple of them were karaoke songs. And a couple of them are remixes of classic Yakuza or Like a Dragon songs, but with sort of more Japanese instrumentation, or I should say era appropriate instrumentation, since Like a Dragon Ishin takes place in the 1860s. And Collisions of our Swords is the Kiwami Ishin version, and it's an arrangement of Collisions of Our Souls from Yakuza 5, which is the boss fight against Watase and Watase's buddy. What's his name? Is it Katsuya?
Yeah, it's Katsuya.
Yeah, Katsuya, right. Yeah, so in the boss fight against Watase and Katsuya, that's not really a spoiler, because from the moment you see those two guys, you know you're fighting them eventually. but what really stood out to me is that the songs from Yakuza 3, 4, and 5 that they changed for the new version of Ishin were sort of high energy butt rock songs that were kind of Yakuza's signature sound around the late 2000s, early 2010s, before they moved into more electronic music and even like dubstep stuff for around Yakuza 7 time. And It's just so fun hearing the Japanese strings, instruments, and percussion to try to samurai up this very sort of grim, crunchy song, and it's for Watase, who's a character portrays one of the sort of samurai working against Saito's faction in Like a Dragon Ishin. It's complicated to keep track of who's on whose side by the end of that game, but it's sort of one of 4 or 5 final bosses you fight in a row in the end game, and it's an absolute blast. The hot-blooded samurai clashes are exactly what I want out of Like a Dragon Ishin, and this takes one of the better boss tracks from Yakuza 5 and just makes an extremely fun new arrangement of it. But I think the game itself is definitely worth checking out. It's because it's so separated from the canon, it's not even a bad choice for someone's first Yakuza game, but be ready to grind for sword forging materials a lot in that game. I never got to experience the original Like a Dragon Ishin, but they replaced a couple instances of the generic boss music with new remixes for this new version, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah, I can understand why. This is a really awesome song. I haven't heard the original yet, but I love this arrangement.
Yeah. I'm surprised with how much they preserved the original arrangement, actually. It's kind of very similar to the original, but it's punched up. I think they did stuff that's more a bit dynamic, and they added those Japanese instruments. I forget what it's called, the koto, I think. And there's little plucks there to make it thematically match the game. But yeah, it's good. And actually, Watase in this game is a really good antagonist. I wish that he was around more.
Yeah, he really only shows up in the last third or so of Ishin. And he's one of my favorite minor antagonists in general. I really thought he was going to be the final boss of Yakuza 5 when I played that for the first time, but they went in a different direction. Don't ask me to explain the plot of Yakuza 5. But cool character, cool theme, both in the original version from over a decade ago and this new version. I don't know all the specifics of the instrumentation. It sounds very different at the beginning of both tracks, but when they settle into the guitar riffs in the middle, it's like, oh no, this is an arrangement of that older song, but it's a very cool one.
Yeah, it seemed like The vibe I was getting was it went from very like rock to something that felt a little bit more like electronic almost, but then with those very traditional instruments kind of mixed in as well. And just kind of that juxtaposition seems like it fit really well for what that game is, of taking those modern aspects and putting it back into the past of, or those modern characters and recasting them like that.
Well, it's sort of interesting. Like the sound of Yakuza really has been this sort of this hard-edged rock since the very beginning, with Hidenori Shoji as the main musical architect of the series. But then I think around Yakuza 6, maybe it was Yakuza 5 and 6, they sort of added more and more composers into the fold, and Chihiro Aoki became the sort of second musical architect of the Yakuza and Like a Dragon series around the mid-2010s. And that's when it switched from more straight-up rock to more electronic music. And like I said, there's even like dubstep drops in Like a Dragon 7 and 8 music. So I think that this is taking like a song from the older Yakuza, but then remaking it with some Japanese instruments, but with the sensibilities of 2020's Yakuza. So it really is a weird amalgam of a lot of musical ideas that this series explores. And I mean, it just wouldn't be an episode of the RPG Fan Podcast Network if either Jono or myself didn't evangelize Yakuza a little bit. So here we are. And it works too, because I know at least three people on RPG Fan staff that started playing the games because of podcasts.
I want to. I'm going to at some point. I have Like a Dragon. Yes.
All right. At least four now. At least four.
I have
four.
It on my PS5. But
go for it.
Find time to play it.
That is always the bigger problem.
ain't that the truth? Yeah. I'm. God, just playing games for the podcast this year. I feel like I'm perpetually running behind. I'm probably going to go back to playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth within minutes after finishing this recording. But I don't know if you're playing Rebirth or any of the other huge releases that we've been somehow slammed with in the first 3 months of 2024, Audra. But at least somewhat recently, you did play this nice remade trilogy.
Yes. I'm still playing it, but I'm definitely getting through it and loving it again. Just got to the Citadel DLC and everything, and I just adore Resynthesis from the Legendary Edition, which is an interesting song. It originally was apparently a scrapped song from a scrapped DLC for Mass Effect 1, and they apparently liked the song enough that they repurposed it for the Legendary Edition.
Okay.
And I actually really like it. I think it's probably one of the better Mass Effect songs, which is surprising because I do like the soundtracks for the games. But there's something about it that really kind of fits for the overall themes of the sci-fi themes and settings. I think it's the instrumentation is great, and it just really sets the tone, I think.
I was like looking up where it played, and it said, according to the comments, like it's like the menu theme for like the launcher.
Yeah, they did for when you choose decide which game you want to play.
Okay.
So it actually kind of does fit overreaching for the entire.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding was that it's a synthesis of the opening menu themes for Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3.
Oh.
But it uses that instrumentation and that atmosphere that the Mass Effect games all have. I hate to just ascribe an entire genre of art to a sound of music, but this screams science fiction. It is that synthesizer and those the echoing. It doesn't have a discernible like real world orchestral instrument that you can sort of attach to, but it's the. But the tones, the echoes, the way it sounds deliberately alien, like it's a John Carpenter soundtrack from the 80s or something similar. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, this is taking place at least in part on a lonely space station, like across the sea of stars. But it's super cool. If you've played the Mass Effect games, even though this song is only from the recent remakes, or I should say remake, because it is a all-in-one package for 1, 2, and 3. It absolutely just screams Mass Effect. And it's unmistakably this game in this series once you hear this. And I did replay the whole trilogy. This is complicated. I've beaten Mass Effect 1 several times, but I've only done a full trilogy play once, or like in the early 2010s, and then replayed them over 2022, and then podcasted about them. But it was so good. The high points of it are so good that it made me like immediately want to replay it even again. And I would feel that anticipation and excitement every time I loaded it up on my PS5 to play, because like, oh man, what kind of shenanigans am I going to get into with Shepard this time?
Oh, that Shepard.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite song on the Mass Effect Legendary Edition launcher. If you know, you know.
That's perfect.
I can't believe you just did that, but it was perfect.
And, well, you know, in Mass Effect, you do visit the moon and travel between the stars. But, Gio, how about when the moon's reaching out to the stars?
that was a really good segue. So let's see. Yeah, I'm bringing, this last segment I'm bringing When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars Reload from Persona 3 Reload.
When that transition came to me, I was a little bit eager to get to it. I have to admit. And the second song on our fourth block for this episode of Rhythm Encounter is from me. I think this is maybe the oldest remake that we have here. It's from 2019. The song is Face Shrine from Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, the Switch version, and the arrangement is by Ryo Nakamatsu. So please enjoy When the Moon's Reaching Out to the Stars, Reload, and Face Shrine. I never feel like
Okay, so yeah, that was When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars Reload. Spoiler alert, I haven't played Persona 3 Reload, but I've listened to the soundtrack basically front and back a few times now. Because like I was just so curious to see if they, you know, how they changed up the songs and like all about the new songs, which are incredible. I was really tempted to bring this song called Color Your Night from this new song called Color Your Night from Persona 3 Reload. But I wanted to bring this one, When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars, because it's a nice showcase, like if listeners like want to compare with the original song, because like there's a new vocalist for Persona 3 Reload. Like they brought this new vocalist and she has like a different tone. It's a bit.
The new vocalist for Persona 3 Reload is Azumi Takahashi, and the original vocalist for Persona 3 is Yumi Kawamura.
Yeah, and they sound very different. I think the whoever arranged this, I think it's Atsushi Kitajo, he kind of like tweaked the song a bit, just a little bit, to like match like her. She has a bit of a more languid tone. Like it's not as like punchy, but it's like very. I don't know how to describe it. It's like very slinky. It's very melodic. Very, and it's not like the original, which is like a bit more like punchy. Not really sure. I'm not really sure what word is proper, but yeah. The original is like one of my favorite songs ever in any Persona game, and so this one had really big shoes to fill, and I would say I'm really happy with it. Like I think. It's a bit warmer, like even the piano's like a bit warmer, like it's a bit more mellow, a bit more chilled out, just a little bit, but I think it works really well. And it's an example of a song that really was successful at a successful redo of an old song, I would say.
This is a very, very smooth new version of this song, and it's a little confusing. Sometimes the song is called When the Moon's Reaching Out for the Stars, but this new one really is listed as When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars. I think I said it incorrectly a couple times in this episode already. But the vocalists for Persona 3, 4, and 5, Yumi Kawamura, Shihoko, Hirata, and then Lin, are, I think, each... super important for the tone of those games, because each of them like contributes probably at least 15 songs to the soundtrack, and those soundtracks are so important and so high impact to those games. It was a little distracting hearing a new version of the song without the original vocalist, but the new vocalist is she sounds good. It doesn't seem quite as quite as dark as the original. Maybe she doesn't have, maybe she didn't smoke quite as many cigarettes as Yumi Kawamura did, but this new version, the strings seem slicker. I think the percussion's a little bit poppier, and it doesn't quite have the weird like echoing bow, 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 that the original had. The note is still there, but it just seems a little bit smoother and more mellow. It's awesome. The original song's great. This version's great, but I am noticing the differences. I like Atsushi Kitajo a lot. He's one of Shoji Meguro's proteges, and I believe he was the music supervisor for like Persona 4 Arena and the Persona Q games.
Oh, okay.
So you'll see. There's a lot of pop rock with electric guitar and piano going at the same time kind of deal. I'm really, really excited to hear his version of Heartful Cry when we get the DLC for Persona 3 Reload. Because again, I think it's one of the best Persona 3 songs. But yeah, I have to admit, I am a little distracted by the new vocalist. But this is a really, really cool new version of this song. I have not played Persona 3 Reload either, because I've been drowning in alternately Dragon Quest, Like a Dragon, Dragon Age, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I've been just really, really busy with big RPGs in 2024 already. I will get to this eventually, because I adore Persona 3, and it has been quite a while since I've played it. But yeah, this just makes me more excited to get to this game eventually.
Yeah, I really enjoy this version of the song. It's a great arrangement, I think.
But you mentioned it didn't seem as dark, and the thing that actually came to my mind with that was it almost has a little bit more of a warmer sound to it overall, which, or like a warmer tone.
Yeah.
Like, it's still really good, and maybe, I mean, I guess the parts were...
Maybe dark was not the right choice of word. I felt like maybe the original was a little harsher and the new one's a little smoother,
yeah.
I think.
Is
something I believe in a little more.
Yeah. I feel like that works for this, for where this song plays, too. Like, it doesn't need to be that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the bopping around town songs.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like it's okay, especially for this one to have that, you know, slightly warmer feeling to it. And, you know, I was still singing along to it while we were playing.
I don't know, another word came to mind, like it's like a bit more loungy, which is I think where the series soundtracks have been moving towards, so it's nice. It's I think it's like almost tailor-made for, I don't know, the taste of younger people these days who like, you know, this kind of music, so I think it's a smart rearrangement.
I hope they go in another direction for Persona 6. Just go straight back to the 80s. Give us a soundtrack that's entirely city pop.
Yes, please. I'll take that. $70. Here you go.
when I listened to the end credit song on Persona 2 Innocent Sin for the first time, and it's Persona 2 Eternal Punishment for the first time, it's this really cool R&B song, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is a 90s game. Where's my 90s R&B RPG? But yeah, there's some unexplored musical genres that the next Persona game could go, because if there's an RPG series that that takes modern music trends and applies them to a dense RPG, it's Persona. And the Persona soundtracks always sound somewhat contemporary, but also very unique to themselves. Whether it's the, you know, the Persona 3 lounginess, the Persona 4 poppiness, or the Persona 5 acid jazz, they're really special. I do not want to admit on air how much time I've spent listening to Persona music on my own time. I got the reincarnation soundtracks. I got the I got the special arranged PSP Persona 2 soundtracks. They're all good though. But, you know, a game that I've had a bit of a longer relationship with than Persona, or a series, it would be Zelda. Link's Awakening is one of my favorite Game Boy games. So when that 2019 remake happened, I saw it at E3, but I didn't get to demo it because the demo line was literally around the entire building. Into the Nintendo booth. So I didn't really get to play it until it came out. But hearing these classic Game Boy tunes rearranged for a modern console was a total delight. And Face Shrine really stuck out to me so much because they put way more thought into this. The original version is in sort of Game Boy bleeps and bloops, and it's just those eighth notes going doom 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 doom, just, and not much else besides that. And this new version has this these really heavy strings under all of it, but still maintain sort of a Game Boy-ish sound for those eighth notes carrying the main melody. And also, it's meant to echo it's meant to echo music elsewhere in the game. There, like, the Face Shrine is a building, it's a temple, but a version of this song happens outside of the temple. Like when you're in the walk up in the ruins leading to the temple, and I think that the music in the Face Shrine is meant to be like the echo of that song from above ground going into the temple, echoing off the temple halls. They acknowledge the Game Boy origins, they make it sort of so much more sinister sounding, And also sort of sound like it's almost like it's diegetic music, like you're hearing the soundtrack from the overworld outside for this area's music. And also, I think the dark and sinister tone matches the tone of the game at this point, because the boss of the Face Shrine is sort of the first one to tell Link, at least hint to Link, the secret of Kolohint Island, and what and the implications of what Link's doing are. Which, I mean, spoilers for a 1995 game or something. Maybe I don't need to go into it, but. For some reason, this felt like a really transformative song from the original version, and it's super super good.
I found it really like when I was listening through to it, I was like, oh yeah, this feels like completely different, and I don't even recognize this. And then it gets to the chorus, or to where it like comes in with the eighth notes. I was like, is this just them playing the Game Boy track, but with a string orchestra backing it?
Yeah, and it's genius. I don't know. They did such a great job, like, you know, because like it would have been very, very simple and very repetitive if they just, did a straightforward rearrangement with, like, you know, I don't know what instrument they'd even use, but. Yeah, I think it was so cool. Like I was also like Lucas. I was like, what is this song? Like it doesn't sound like the original. But then the chiptune started creeping in. It was like, oh, so good. I got chills.
I'm not familiar with the original, but I really love the instrumentation in this version of the song, and I quite liked, especially hearing your thoughts on it. I mean, just the idea of it being like you going underground or outside of the overworld is, it's a really fitting for the, how it sounds and the emotions it kind of carries on.
I mean, Face Shrine is, I think, the sixth dungeon in the game, because there's eight main dungeons and then the finale. So it's roughly at the 2/3 mark. And, it's when the story starts to take a sort of darker turn as the stakes shape a little bit, which is crazy that I'm talking about a Game Boy game with like darkness and story stakes, but Link's Awakening really does have that. And I think this track, like, being made to sound so much more sinister than just the pretty much single track of eighth notes that the original version had, it's a jarring change. I was so impressed when I heard this, and I when I came up with the topic for this episode a long time ago, it was on my original list of notes for that. I think it was like this and the Trials of Mana remake and a bunch of stuff from FF7 remake. But we've had, you know, more episodes to talk about those other two leading up to now. But me wanting to talk about this song was part of why I wrote that on our ideas board in 2020.
That soundtrack has so many songs that show up in lots of other media and have had their own remakes and stuff. So this one kind of caught me off guard, because I always think of, you know, the titular Ballad of the Windfish, or I know Tall Tall Heights shows up in a bunch of, or has been like transported into a bunch of them. So something that's a little bit less pervasive. It was a really neat one to bring attention to.
Yeah, I mean, the original version is so basic, it's almost like a throwaway from the original. And like I mentioned before, I think this is the most transformative song in the new soundtrack. It does the most with the least, as it were. So, remakes, remasters, we've played a lot of them, and we just talked about eight of them. I think that the eight games we talked about today are all worth playing, worth exploring, if whether you've played the originals or not. And maybe not all of them are to your taste exactly. Like, I mean, not everybody likes third-person shooters and should go for Mass Effect, and not everybody likes, you know, 16-bit aesthetics and should go for the pixel remasters. But I genuinely think that all eight of these are excellent remasters that are worth playing both as an RPG fan or as a fan of RPG music, because they put the work into these remastered soundtracks for these eight games. And I mean, more remakes and more remasters are coming out every year, and I wish all of them put this level of attention into audio. But we can't always be so fortunate, but at least they did a good job with these eight. But listeners, I hope that you enjoyed what you heard today. We have links to the VGMDB and possibly also Bandcamp or the appropriate digital storefront for all of these tracks that you can find in the show notes. And so we always like to discuss what games have shown up for the first time on Rhythm Encounter every time we do a new episode. And I believe we have four debuts for this episode of Rhythm Encounter. This is the first time we're hearing music from Super Mario RPG Remake, as well as Like a Dragon Isshin, Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and Persona 3 Reload. So yeah, those are four Rhythm Encounter debuts. Which isn't such a bad number. Sometimes the number is only zero or one new games debuting. So yeah, four. I think we did pretty good.
Yeah. Although the original versions of all of those are probably on there.
Oh yeah, I think that's definitely true. Maybe not for Isshin, but everything definitely has at least an original appearance. But let's talk about what's coming next in Rhythm Encounter. Coming in 2 weeks, we have a special Music to Cook To episode that I have no idea what to expect. I've always thought that Go-Go's track in Final Fantasy VI sounds like a pizzeria, but other than that, I have no food commentary to attribute to RPG soundtracks. But speaking of Final Fantasy games, episode 134 in about 4 weeks is going to be a composer spotlight for Masashi Hamauzu. So whether it's your Legend of Legacies or your Final Fantasy 13s, there's going to be a lot to enjoy in that episode. And also, Rhythm Encounter is not the only RPG-themed podcast in the RPG Fan Podcast Network. There's also Random Encounter every 2 weeks about randomness and what games we're playing and what's going on with RPGFan.com. And also Retro Encounter. Maybe you've heard me talk about that one before. Our weekly podcast about many different topics. You can also find RPG Fan on, oh boy, Facebook, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, YouTube, Discord, probably other places I'm forgetting. There's many, many ways to interact with RPG Fan besides just enjoying the podcasts. You can also review our podcast on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, whatever have you. The more reviews we get and the more subscriptions we have, the more exposure the podcasts get, and we appreciate every single subscribe and review. If you want to give us feedback, you can always email music@rpgfan.com. But let's see, we're not quite ready to share our socials yet, because I mentioned at the beginning that we had 9 tracks to celebrate today, because we have one more remake and one more secret track, as we often do on Rhythm Encounter, and this week it's coming from Gio. So what is our special bonus track of this week, Gio?
Hello, I'm bringing a bonus track from Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, which got a remaster last year. This song is Cabanella, A White Lovely Lanky Man.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Gio. I love Ghost Trick. It's one of my favorite DS games, and I'm super glad that more people are going to be able to play it for the first time thanks to this remake. But before we sign off for good, let's let the listeners know how they can get in touch with us as individuals and not just as a website or a podcast, starting with you, Audra.
AudraB@rpgfan.com.
Now Gio.
Gio@rpgfan.com. And you can also find me on Discord, on the RPG Fan Discord. My name is just Gio.
Now Lucas.
You can find me at Raefgall, RAEFGALL, on all of the social media platforms. And I also have a YouTube channel on that name where I upload daily Let's Plays.
Excellent. And listeners, if you're a listener of Retro Encounter, maybe you've heard me give a variation of a sign-off hundreds of times, but the easiest ways to find me online are to look to Blue Sky, Instagram, or Discord, on all three of which I am called Evoker for Dogs. So let's play out with Inspector Cabanella's theme from Ghost Trick Remastered, a perfect soundtrack for a dancing detective trying to solve murder. Bye, everybody.
Did you do that with your voice?
Yeah, no, it was it's vibrating your cheeks while doing a sharp inhale whistle.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yep.
Also, it didn't scare the crap out of me. Perfect.